Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Peter, how are you?
I am okay. How are you?
I'm doing all right, actually.
Good.
We're doing this podcast a little later than normal. Usually we record relatively early in the morning.
Yeah.
And now it's nearly midday, so I'm feeling a little bit more awake than usual, which is unexpected.
Yeah, I'm feeling good about it, except for the fact that I'm now thinking, oh man, by the time we're done, it'll almost be stream time. So, you know, where has the day gone? It'll almost be Friday when we finish recording this podcast, it feels like.
Sure. Yeah. It'll nearly be episode 104 by the time we finish this one. But yeah, there we go. We'll press ahead, shall we? So this is our video game podcast where we talk about video game things, we take some questions, we talk about what we're playing, we bring some weird video game news along. And because it's such a brilliantly constructed show, everyone is lining up around the block. By everyone, I mean all the companies. All those companies just on legs. Imagine a person, but it's a company.
It's
right?
Just a logo with a pair of cartoon legs underneath it.
Precisely. Yeah. All queuing up around the block to sponsor this very podcast. They're like, I've got to get in on that. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Yeah. Why wouldn't I want to have my name read at the beginning and at the end of the Triple Jump podcast? So, Peter has this week's ad read with a very real sponsor, Don't You Peter.
I do. Also, so at time of, as you say, we're recording this on a Thursday at midday-ish. At time of recording, yesterday there was the latest Nintendo Direct, of course. And they announced all kinds of new games and exciting things. But there's also a brand new product or sort of intellectual property being announced. It was very much blink and you'll miss it, though. So they've actually paid for a message on this podcast because they think that, like, no one seems to have seen it. There's not a single write-up for it anywhere on the internet.
My goodness.
Keep your eyes out, everyone, for Nintendo's Switch. Nintendo's Switch.
Wow.
Nintendo have fully trademarked and copyrighted the word Switch.
Can they do that?
They can. They've done it. It costs a lot of money, but they've spoken to, like, the Oxford English Dictionary and Merriam-Webster herself. They've spoken to Miriam and said, look, this word is ours now, here's some money. So not only can we no longer legally, without paying royalties to Nintendo, talk about magic users who ride broomsticks and have black cats,
right,
but they've also done the same thing with the homophones of the word witch, so WHIC as well, the sort of, don't even know what kind of word that is. Is it a preposition? Wow. Is it a conjunctive? Is it a... I don't know what it is, but we're not allowed to say that. You have to just, work around it somehow.
Which is which?
I don't know. That cost you about £60 to say that sentence.
I think you'll find that cost Triple Jump about £60.
Right, okay, fair enough. So that's it, everyone. It's not really a gaming product. It's just something that's been trademarked by a video gaming company. Don't say the word witch or it'll cost you. Nintendo's witch.
It's got our name on it.
It's got witch. Witch. It's also not real.
Oh, you are kidding me.
It's a lie.
That's insane. You
did
know,
you
because
truly
Nintendo...
believe that they'd been in touch with Miriam? She's dead, probably.
She's long dead. It's just Webster now.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. But also I kind of did, because Nintendo, they like to do things like this, don't they?
They do, yeah.
Especially
how dare
real
you show
words.
Our trailer on your YouTube channel to hundreds of thousands of people and try and market our company for us for free? How dare you?
How dare... Are you playing one of our games that you've bought?
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Who do you think you are?
Money, please. Thank you. Mm. We'll take a bit of that 50p ad revenue.
Yeah.
Cheers. We need it. We're Nintendo.
You shouldn't be taking a 50p from me, I don't think.
It's not safe. No, as well established, we know that. Well, if that's not real, I tell you what is. Mm. The wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you get access to the podcast post that goes up usually on a Tuesday, where we ask for questions for this very podcast. Before I throw it over to the first question asker of the week.
Question master, yeah.
We must determine where we are walking in the video version of this podcast.
Oh, I don't know. Would you like to choose this week? I feel like I often jump in and just say, you know, the moon or whatever.
Well, that's great. We're on the moon. Well done, Peter.
Oh.
Another great... No, we're in a dictionary this week, of course.
Okay, good. I'm pretty sure we've done the moon before. It was probably an early one. Yeah.
It's an obvious choice, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
The sky.
It's a real Adrian Brody Quest background, isn't it?
It
really
is. Where else can we go? Have we been in the
bottom
sea
of
yet?
The sea? We must have been, yeah. Eiffel Tower, sure. I don't know.
I don't think we've been in the Eiffel Tower, but there's options for sure. Mm. Options for sure. But yeah, we're in a big dictionary this week. Okay, first... question asker, Peter, who is it?
It's Darren Kank, I think, who says, good day, Ben and Peter. As we know, making video games is both expensive and time-consuming. So in order to let smaller studios or developers produce incredible games, there are a few options to fund the development process. It could be crowdfunding a game, selling a game as early access, or a beta version. I suppose pre-ordering a game falls under this category too. This can either be a huge success, see Minecraft, or a massive failure, see Yog Ventures, Darren says. So if you're interested in putting money down on a game before it's finished, what would make you go, shut up and take my money? Like the Futurama meme.
Just like the Futurama meme. Well, firstly, we should clarify that we are no longer salaried employees of Yogscast, but we were, and we have a continuing relationship with them. Mm-hmm. So let's just get that out in the open.
Yeah. We're network members on
we are network members in our spare time.
Extracurricular channel. Yeah.
Yeah. However, I suppose I've come up with the exact scenario where that would happen, but in terms of speaking more generally, I suppose you would have to really trust the creator, you know, your...
That's exactly what I wrote. Yeah.
Like, what are they called? Double Fine. You know, mm-hmm. like they've turned to Kickstarter, I think, a couple of times now. They're a very well known game. It could be a game name. It could be argued that they are so well known that, I mean, what are they doing there on Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
Surely you could just find the funding. You've got those connections, Tim. Surely? No?
Do it, Tim.
But they command a very loyal fan base and who trust in what they do, and the games produced from those Kickstarter projects were very, very good. Mm-hmm. And so if you know the entity, I think then that's a good way to get started. But equally, people knew and trusted Yogscast, mm-hmm. and Yog Ventures was a disaster and a huge failure.
But I guess not as
good.
Not as a game developer is maybe the difference.
No, I suppose not. Yeah, I suppose like people need to do their due diligence, but in that instance, people saw the name Yogscast, and they trusted it, and they were let down massively.
Yeah, I put developer reputation. Sorry, so
okay,
more in terms of. But then, in some cases, that's not indicative. Like no one had heard of Notch before, really. I don't think, and you know, mm-hmm. Minecraft was a huge success. But one of the other things I wrote in terms of which kind of applies more to that scenario was maybe an early playable version, like pre any kind of crowdfunding. That's already fun, and you know, you can kind of just think, well, as long as I can add to this, then that's going to be a worthwhile product. Like I'm pretty sure Minecraft started out purely as a passion project. He didn't try and fund it or sell it at all. It was a free early build, I think it was called. First it was in dev, and then when it became like an infinitely spawning world, he changed it to inf dev. Around that point, I think you could start purchasing it as, you know, a kind of alpha, beta. That was good, because I remember playing that in the very early days, back when the grass was lime green and horrible. And even then, it was fun. It was like 3D Lego. Multiplayer came in relatively early on, so I used to play it with some like friends on a forum I frequented at the time. And we just built this like big town together and like kept flooding everything, and it was already a lot of fun before I think most people had invested any money into it. So maybe at that point we had to have paid in order to play multiplayer. I can't remember the exact timeline, but certainly an early version, an alpha or a pre-alpha that is already fun and promising, I think is definitely the way to go before you invest too much money into anything.
Yeah. Absolutely. From a perspective of protecting your wallet and your expectations, do your due diligence. And
yeah.
If you can play a version, as you say, Peter, then that's a great way to get started. But
it's not always an option.
Always an option. And, you know, if you do stick to the does the developer have a good reputation, you could potentially miss out on your Minecrafts, for example.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
From an unknown creator, a relative unknown who comes out and, you know, just swinging for the fences. There is a very real risk you could miss that. But equally, Kickstarter's a big website. There's a lot of people on there, and there's a very good chance you could support something that's perhaps a bit plops. Mm-hmm. And in a way, that's kind of nice, because you've been able to support a creative who is trying to fulfill their vision. But on the other hand, someone could cut and run and just say, oh, I don't want to do it anymore.
It didn't
you
work.
You can't have your money back. It didn't work. Turns out I couldn't make games, and I've got your money. So there we go. The exact situation, though, Peter, that would make me... Because I've never supported anything on Kickstarter before.
Haven't you? I have a few times.
No. What is it? Isn't it 50p cleaning kits or...
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. Saline solutions, right?
Hmm.
I would...
Enemas.
I would lose my marbles, pardon my French, if the... at least a part of, or perhaps a decent number of, the original Free Radical design team somehow got the Time Splitters license, or not, didn't even get that, and just said, hey, we're making a Time Splitters GoldenEye inspired shooter. Yeah, spiritual successor. We need your support. We're a small studio, but we're like all the original team. Then I would be very tempted to get involved with that. You know, I would love to support that and see that happen. And that actually happened with a friend of mine who is the editor for Push Square. He's a massive fan of, what's the name of that game? Shenmue. He's a massive Shenmue fan. So when Shenmue 3 went up and they were asking for money, he put in an amount of money that he has not disclosed to me, but I understand it to be quite disturbing, in order to get a load of the rewards to feature in the game in various manners.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be a game that I was really, really interested in to make me say, shut up and take my money.
Me too. Although I think typically most of the games that are very dear to me in that sense are currently owned by big name publishers, you know, Activision, Ubisoft, the likes of those. So, probably unlikely to happen in terms of crowdfunding, but you never know. Yeah.
What about your Haven, The Return of the King?
Oh, yeah. That could be it. That could be one. I wonder if Traveller's Tales still own that. I'm not sure. Mm.
What would be the reward that you would want the most out of a sequel, and how much would you be willing to spend on it?
If somebody donates to Tier 10, which is £50,000, we will actually put an ending in this game. I mean, that would be worth every penny.
That's so much, though, Peter. That's like a quarter of your salary.
It is, yeah. I don't know. It's hard to imagine some of the rewards they do for that. It's such a like relatively little known game. You know, it's not like, for example, Time Splitters, which actually most people or lots of people know and love, and it's just sitting gathering dust unduly, I would say. Whereas Haven It's not like they would go, it's time, everyone, we're
we
doing
know
it.
We know you've all been waiting for it.
So I'm not sure how they would incentivize things in terms of tiers there, but I would maybe support that in terms of, if only to just get a conclusion. If they promised that they wouldn't leave the second one hanging, then it would be nice just to get some kind of ending. And then they could do a third one if they wanted, but just without a massive cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I guess maybe just thinking about it in terms of Time Splitters-esque, as I say, gathering dust games, I would happily support Tombi 3. I think that was a great series. A lot of people love that. I think that would actually do quite well in terms of crowdfunding. And Whoopi Camp, the original developers, no longer exists. So I don't know who owns it. I can't remember who published it or if they maybe published it themselves. So it's sort of out there somewhere. So yeah, that would be a good one.
What if you could, one of the rewards was to have your face digitized and be like a background extra?
We will come to your house and paint your hair pink, especially for you.
That's it. You're not even going to be in the game. We'll just paint your hair pink. We'll come to your house. $200 will come to your house.
Sharpen your teeth and put you in some sort of green pants.
Oh, no. I don't like just leave you there. I don't like that. But you have to pay for the privilege, of course, naturally. Yeah. Well, it's time to move on, Peter. To a groundbreaking section we've never done before on this show.
True.
It's called
What We Play In.
It's What We Play In time. Time to talk about what we are playing. Peter, what are you playing?
At time of release of this podcast, people listening / watching may have seen us play Little Nightmares 2 over on YouTube together on the joint Blaze It stream on Thursday. At time of recording, we are yet to do that. But this week, I have been playing and completing Little Nightmares 2.
Ooh.
And I then went back and played it again, partly to gather a few more bits. I tried to do it without a guide, and so I've still got things left over. And at this point, I might go through and use a guide, because I know there is a little tiny post-credits scene unlockable if you find all the bits and bobs. So that's exciting. But partly I just kind of wanted to enjoy it, play it again, because I really enjoyed it the first time round, and it's quite a short game. It's maybe 4-ish hours. And also wanted to kind of not struggle too much with any of the puzzles when we're streaming, and I don't want to get stuck for ages. There weren't many moments like that even on my first run, but there were one or two where I didn't really notice that like a bit of scenery was actually, you know, crucial to the puzzle. And there was a bit where I had to push a shopping trolley around as a platform, so I had to move it into one place so I could like climb up and jump over it and get to another shelf or whatever. And then once I'd done something up there, I had to get down, move the trolley somewhere else so I could use it for platforming to get to a different area. And I could tell that that's what I was supposed to do, but there was this like plank on the floor that was stopping me from moving the trolley into that part of the room. It was like separating it. And I was like, oh, well, they've clearly put that there to stop me getting the trolley there, so that must not be the solution. And I was there for like 10 minutes, and I was like, I don't want to, I've not looked at a guide yet. And on my first run, I've managed to get to this point in the game without peeking. And I was like, I might have to. And then I tried one more time, and the trolley eventually, with a bit of a shove, went over this little divot in the floor.
Oh, weird.
And apparently it was supposed to do that all along. It was just, for some reason, they've put something there that makes it look like you're not supposed to take the trolley there, which is very, very trouble with the trolley, eh? Yeah, definitely.
Very weird. That's like a strange physics issue.
Yeah, it just looks like classic game design where they're like, yeah, we've given you this pushable thing, but we're blocking off this part of the room so you can't push the pushable thing there. Like that, you see that in a lot of games, but it looked like that, but wasn't that. So that was kind of strange. But that aside, that's what I've been playing this week, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I found it probably scarier than the first one.
Oh, good. Can't wait to see it.
In one particular area of the game. I think there's one place in that one. So there's different zones, again, that kind of, I was going to say looked after, but there's probably a more sinister word, ruled by different monsters. And one particular part of the game world has some real horrible things in it that honestly probably unnerved me as much as like the Resi 2 remake zombies or something in terms of recent games that have scared me a bit.
Right.
you know, they really are horrible, the way they move. So I can't wait to share that with you.
Yeah, me too.
And they weren't even the boss. They were like the minions of the area.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
So it gets worse.
Bosses are pretty horrible too. Yeah. So real spooky, real pretty in a horrible, haunting way. And well made once again. Really, really love that game. We've done a Quipscope on it already, but just to add to that, I would absolutely recommend this to people who've played the first one and enjoyed it, but also people who haven't played the first one at all. Someone asked me on Twitter, can I play this without having played the first? Yes, you can. You should still play the first because it's great, but this second one requires no prior knowledge. There's just a few hints and nods, but give it a go for sure.
Amazing. Sounds excellent.
Yeah. What have you been playing, Ben?
I have been playing only Persona 5 Royal, and that's
Ooh, it. Yeah.
All week. At the time of recording, I took yesterday off, and I sat in my pants and ate pizza and played Persona 5 Royal all day.
The dream.
The dream, yeah. It's a long game. Yeah. And I knew it was a long game going into it, but my goodness. And I think this isn't necessarily a Persona 5 unique issue. But maybe I seem to encounter these issues a fair amount with Japanese video games in general, where they tend to retread a lot of the same narrative ground, like explaining concepts to new characters that you are already intimately familiar with. Mm-hmm. So like in this game, I feel like I've heard how palaces work explained to new characters at least a dozen times now.
Right.
And every time it's just like the amount of dialogue interactions whenever something tiny happens, it feels like there's so much more conversation than there needs to be.
Yeah.
And without a doubt, obviously the bulk of this of the game time comes from dialogue and, like, you know, scripted events where you're just sort of tied to your chair and have to watch. Mm-hmm. And occasionally you get to choose a dialogue response or whatever, but yeah, it's not dragging, that's not the right word at all, but certainly I'm near the end of the game now, and I feel like there's been a lot of conversations that perhaps were just not necessary or could have been shortened just a bit. And I had this issue with the original game as well. They just explain things again and again. It's like, I understand. I was there. I understand. And it's like there's a revelation about a character. And they say, oh my goodness, do you remember when they did this? We should have seen it coming. It's like, I do remember, yeah, because I was here. You don't need to show me again. I was here for it.
It's kind of a thing in storytelling, isn't it, to try not to have to retread old ground to new character. Like, there are techniques you can use as a writer to get around, like, having to go, hello, new character, my name is this, and I come from this place, and we did this together.
Here
and
are
this
all is... the things we've done.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And obviously this is translated from the original Japanese, and I've got to assume that it just makes far more sense in the original Japanese, and that's just how it works when translated into English. I love the game. Really enjoying it, obviously, and I'm looking forward to getting it done so I can start on Persona 5 Strikers properly. But yeah, it's just when you're 85 hours into a JRPG and they're telling you things you already know, you're sort of like, can we get on with it just a bit, please? Come on, guys, you know, there's only so much time before the arcade stops letting me win the burger toy,
yeah,
you know, that I want to win in the time slot. This game, though, as it turns out, Persona 5 Royal is far easier to platinum than the original game, and it's gonna happen, Peter. I'm gonna platinum it. Mm-hmm. I'm on track.
I believe you. I trust you.
Yeah, it was just surprising because the original one was notoriously a bit of a challenge and a bit of a chore, whereas this one, I'm actually gonna do it, which is exciting because, as much as I love Persona games, I don't have any sort of digital trinkets to show that, and this will be my opportunity to stick one in the cabinet, so to speak.
Are you having to use a guide along the way in case there are some one-shot trophies to get that will maybe make you have to play another 75 hours to go back and do it again, or are there not any of those trophies?
So I think I think I mentioned last week that I am actually following like a walkthrough guide to make sure I sit. But it wasn't my intention to get the platinum. It was just to see and experience as much of this game as possible.
Right.
But as it turns out, the guide is incredibly thorough. And when I was having a look at my trophy list, I saw that there were very few trophies apart from the mandatory story ones that I hadn't actually got. And I've cleared pretty much all of those now. So it's just a case of finishing the game, which is, you know, it's plain sailing from here. It was a bit of a pain in the ass. Some of them, you know, defeating the Reaper is a bit of a challenge. But I did do that. In the original game, there was a glitch where if you fought him during a certain time period in the real world, he would get sad and die after three turns.
Right.
And they've patched that now. So you have to fight him legitimately. And kudos to everyone who did do that. Yeah, it's really good. It's dragging a bit. It's not dragging, but it is dragging, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I am really enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to seeing it through to the end.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Well, it's time to move on to question two. Ben, would you like to read it? It's from Will Height.
Will Height. Let us know, Will. Will says, "Hey guys, I've really gotten much more into gaming over the past year or so and have been interested in going back and playing some classic games featured on your list videos. My most recent purchase is Knights of the Old Republic, which was number one on your Star Wars list. I've played the first level, and I hate it. Oh, no. It's the first game where I'm not in control of combat. I just have to stand there. I just have to stand there and tell my guy to shoot instead of me actually pulling the trigger, like the game I'm more used to, which is Battlefront 2 for the original Xbox. Now, obviously, this game must be good. Is this just a style of shooting in a game that I'm not accustomed to? Does it change as it goes along? I apologize if this is a dumb question. Love you guys. All the best. Will from New Jersey."
Not a dumb question, Will. There are no stupid questions.
Have you played KOTOR?
I've not played KOTOR for my sins. You know, despite being a big Star Wars fan, I missed it first time round because I believe it was... It was like Microsoft exclusive. It was like Xbox and PC, right?
I think it still is, yeah. That's why I haven't played it.
No, of course it still is. But yeah, certainly it was a time where... Maybe it was when I did have access to an Xbox. But I guess back then as well, I wasn't so clued into everything that was coming out on console and PC. It was only later that I, you know, really started following releases on various platforms. So it is on my list to play. I actually bought it probably a year or two ago on Steam. It came as part of like a Star Wars bundle, and I was looking forward to playing it. The Steam port was like broken, where you just couldn't get past the first menu. I think it was like, I can't remember if it was like the menu is like wanting a controller input but would only accept mouse or vice versa, and it was like a known issue, and people were saying like, "I've just bought Knights of the Old Republic and I can't play it, I can't launch it," and they were like, "Yeah, this needs fixing." So then I just left it. I believe it's now been fixed on Steam, and I have every intention to play it when I have the time, because people tell me very good things about it. Unfortunately, I know the twist, which is a shame, but you know, never mind. But to answer Will's question, yeah, this is just a style of combat you get, particularly in PC games, I would say. But you probably get it elsewhere too. Where, I mean, the places I associate it with most are in sort of MMOs and things like that. Or like, so you get it in RuneScape, for example, where you just click on an enemy and then you'll both start kind of swinging at each other. Or I used to play a lot of Guild Wars, and that was the same thing. I played an archer, and I would like click on an enemy. My archer would start firing arrows just one after the next. And while he's doing that, I could like press keys on my keyboard to do like different types of arrow and powers, and you know, triple shot and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is just a different style of combat. I can understand why a lot of people aren't so into it. I remember the first time I played RuneScape. Actually, I was like, "Oh, what's this about? You know, this is a bit weird." But on the other hand, I think KOTOR is mostly loved for its story and characters and the world that it, you know, that the developers have created there and the writers. So I mean, I think if you're a if you have any kind of interest in Star Wars, I suspect it's worth persevering with the combat. Maybe not if you really do hate it that much. I don't believe it changes. I can't imagine it changes as the game progresses. But you know, as I say, I've not played it myself. But yeah, I guess my advice would be, if you're interested in it as a Star Wars game, maybe try and persevere, and you might at least enjoy the story and the game world and the lore and stuff. But if you're not such a Star Wars fan, then I don't know, maybe it's not for you. Might just not be for you.
Yeah, it's entirely possible that it's not, and that's okay.
Yeah,
to walk away from something like that, because while I can't speak specifically for KOTOR because I haven't played it, because I didn't have a thing to play it on, and I still, well, I suppose I could play it on PC now.
Yeah.
And maybe this isn't the specific case in this instance, because Will talks about playing Battlefront 2 on the original Xbox being his closest comparison, sort of, to you know, that period of games for him. So, you know, maybe this isn't necessarily the case for you. It's just, in this instance, as you say, Peter, it's just a different style of gameplay. But broadly speaking, it can be difficult to go back to classic games. I don't think it necessarily, I think everyone agrees, it doesn't mean those games are bad. It just means that games have come a very long way.
Yeah.
Since KOTOR came out, an example that I'd like to give is Final Fantasy VII as well. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since that came out. People who grew up loving that game, like me, will tell you it's the best game ever and there's nothing wrong with it and it has aged gloriously. But if you try and get someone who has never played it before to play it, it's gonna take some persevering, because there's a lot of obtuse control and presentation situations, shall we say, with Final Fantasy VII that have only been made perhaps a bit more prominent due to the passage of time and how far we've come. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as Peter said, if you're able to persevere with KOTOR, there's a good chance you'll fall as in love with it as everyone else. But that initial hurdle of getting used to a game from, God, it's got to be close to 20 years ago now, right?
Yeah, it must be, I suppose. Yeah.
To get over that hurdle, it's going to take some doing, and it's only going to, I would say, it's only going to get harder the further games go, you know, like the further we get into the future. And the older a game gets, the harder it's going to be to jump into it having never played it before. But it is possible, but it's okay to give up.
I dislike the fact that now when people say, oh, that must have been 20 years ago, my brain initially goes, okay, so circa 1990.
I was going to say 1980s. That's 20 years ago, isn't it?
That was 20 years ago was 2001. It wasn't even 2000. It was 2001. Yeah. That's revolting.
Isn't it? It's pretty disgusting. But yeah, keep us posted, Will. Hope you get something out of it. I've also heard amazing things, and I would love to experience it for myself as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peter.
Good luck with it. Well, it's time for something a little unusual.
A little bit strange. Are you ready? A little bit strange. Perhaps it's
weird news.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's weird news time. Peter, what is your weird video game news this week?
I have got a weird video game news this week that came out last week during our recording process.
Ooh.
So it was last week, it was hot off the presses. It's now cold off the presses.
Yes.
But we'll enjoy it anyway because I wish I'd known. I wish they'd just released it 2 hours earlier. this is according to the BBC. BBC News.
We know that one.
We do know that one. 7 days ago. Do we have a writer? Is it down at the bottom? I can't cite the writer of this article, but it's the BBC.
Brian himself. Yeah. Brian Busfield Corporation.
Mm-hmm. Pigs can play video games with their snouts, scientists find.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you, BBC. There's a picture of a pig playing a video game with its snout, which I can send to you shortly.
I would like that.
Here we go. Pigs can play video games, scientists have found, after putting four fun-loving swine to the test. Four pigs, Hamlet, Omelette, Ebony, and Ivory, were trained to use an arcade-style
joystick. They should have ended on Hamlet. It's way better.
They should. I think it's a bit cruel calling a pig a ham pun, to be honest, but, you know, whatever.
Bacon boy.
Bacon boy. Delicious, they should have called him. Just really take breakfast to be. Hamlet, Omelette, Ebony, and Ivory were trained to use an arcade-style joystick to steer an on-screen cursor into walls. Okay.
Wow.
That great game. Wall Crash.
Mm-hmm.
Researchers said, the fact the pigs understood the connection between the stick and the game, quote, is no small feat. And the pigs even continued playing when the food reward dispenser broke, apparently for the social contact. Usually, pigs would be given a food pellet for winning the game level, but during testing, it broke, and they kept clearing the game levels when encouraged by some of the researchers' kind words.
Aww. Aww. We won't make you a sandwich.
We won't. If you complete level 16, we will not cook you. This sort of study is important because, as with any sentient beings, how we interact with pigs and what we do to them impacts and matters to them, lead author Danny Candace Crony said. That's not really where I thought they were going with this, but okay. The team also thought that the fact that the pigs could play video games at all, since they are far-sighted animals with no hands or thumbs, was remarkable, but it was not easy for them. Out of the two Yorkshire pigs, oh yes, represent, that's Hamlet it. Was better at the game than Omelette, but both struggled when it got harder, hitting the single target just under half the time. The Panapinto micro pigs had a bigger gamer skill gap. While Ivory was able to hit one wall targets 76% of the time, Ebony could only do it 34% of the time.
Oh, come on, Ebony.
God, Ebony letting the side down. But the researchers were still satisfied that the attempts were deliberate and focused rather than random, what they call above chance. This means, to some extent, all pigs acquired the association between the joystick and cursor movement. It sort of goes on, but I'll just read this last little bit. Kate Daniels from Willow Farm in Worcestershire told BBC Radio 4's Today programme that while the scientists might have been impressed, I don't think this will come as a surprise to anyone that works with pigs. She added, they're not playing Minecraft, but they can manipulate a situation to get a reward, and it's no surprise at all. So, there you go.
I want to see a pig play Minecraft.
Yeah, me too. That's the next experiment. Can
God.
A pig defeat the Ender Dragon?
Easy. Speedrun.
Yeah.
Minecraft speedrun with... I want to see Ivory do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the worst one. The worst pig at games. When I saw this, a lot of people were saying, I knew that. We had lessons about it at school in the 90s. We've known this for ages.
And yeah, actually, I had one comment about that when I tweeted it. Yeah,
I'm wondering why this has come to the fore now, if that was the case. Like, I personally had never heard of that before,
no.
This news. But seemingly, people have been aware of pig's natural Minecraft ability for a while now.
Yeah, well, back then in the 90s they were playing Command and Conquer or something, I think,
or a very very early
War.
Alpha version Hogs of War. Yeah, very early alpha version of Minecraft perhaps.
Yeah, maybe.
the wall hitting game. Itch yeah, give dev. Them Call of Duty or something. Let's see how they get on with Warzone.
Yeah.
Then I'll be impressed. Pigs are very clever, though.
They are very clever, yeah. Yeah, there's that pig that, like, the house set on fire, and it went and woke up all the family. It was like a house pig, and house the smoke pig. Alarms didn't go off, and it went and woke everyone up and got them. I wonder if they woke up to the delicious smell of bacon when they opened their eyes. Just hot
maybe
pig.
It's just that pig manipulating the situation for their own gain again, because they're like, these are the treat givers.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are in danger. Must mm-hmm. save the treat givers.
Yeah, otherwise I won't get treats.
No treats. No treats at all.
Yeah. There you go. That's with some weird news there. Have you got weird news yourself, Ben?
Very weird. Yes, I do have some weird news. I'm currently battling with potentially the worst set of adverts I've ever seen on a website. PC Gamer, thank you. Just a huge Visa advert that's animated on one side and has a video that won't stop playing on the left side.
The worst kind of ads. Look, I don't really care how many banners you put on my web page to a, you know, within reason, but do mm-hmm. not put those autoplay giant screen covering ads.
Yeah,
on anything.
You scroll down, the video starts playing, you scroll away from it, and it's like, it's okay, I can be in a little window over here, look, I'll come with you.
But the pause button doesn't work, so enjoy.
Don't you dare try and close it either, I'm going to open a new tab.
Yeah.
You wanted a credit card, didn't you? No. I just wanted to read this news story, which is half the size of the total adverts on page now. Just nestled in the middle. Anyway, it's not Natalie Clayton's fault, she's written a fantastic story here.
Thank you, Natalie.
And the headline is, Joseph Fares promises $1,000 to anyone who gets bored of It Takes Two.
What? How do you measure that? Surely everyone can just say, I'm bored, give me the thousand.
It's Joseph Fares. We love Joseph Fares.
Yeah.
We love his brother. Leo. We love him and his wonky games.
Yeah,
that are really fun. A bit like David Cage in that he's kind of the only guy doing those kinds of games. And he's important, and we want him to keep making them. Mm-hmm. It Takes Two looks great, though. Anyway, It Takes Two, the next game from A Way Out developer Hazelight Studios, has gone gold. And Joseph Fares is so confident in its success that he'll give you $1,000 if you get bored of it. That's what the notorious studio director told Game Informer in a recent interview. Fares, who's perhaps better known as the Flip the Oscars guy, made the bullish claim that it is impossible to get bored with his next game, which follows a little girl dealing with her... This isn't funny, I'm just laughing
no.
at that. Yeah. A little girl dealing with her parents' separation by playing with magical dolls. That's another thing that I can guarantee you with It Takes Two. It's impossible, and quote me on this, to get tired of the game, Fares told the outlet. You can put this as a headline. I can literally give $1,000 to anyone who says, oh, I'm tired of this game now, because it doesn't surprise me. $1,000, I guarantee. I'll give it to everyone who gets tired. But they have to be honest about it.
But they have to be honest about it.
They've got to be honest about it. Come on, don't make me regret this.
Oh, God.
And then PC Gamer goes on to have a little dig at Joseph Fares, which feels a little unfounded, but I do kind of broadly agree with their points there. Those are bold words for a man whose last game, A Way Out, failed to impress in our review. While Hazelight made a name for itself with Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons' clever co-op adventures, Chris Schilling felt the crime caper follow-up failed to make the most of its setup with a script that could have been, and I quote, written by a bot fed exclusively on dialogue from straight-to-DVD action film.
I mean, that's kind of true. That's a good quote.
It's pretty true, isn't it?
A true one.
Ouch, it then says. Considering Fares' penchant for fits of passion, I wouldn't rush to get your invoices ready, but the director's confidence in the interview is infectious. Earlier in the interview, he speaks on the frustrations of getting players to finish games, exasperated that only 51% of players finished A Way Out, despite that being a relatively high figure for games. We need to fix the problem. This is how he talks in my head, just sort of quite agitated
and
a lot of the time.
Sort of shouting even though he's in a small interview room with one of the best.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to fix the problem that that people are not even finishing our games. People are not even finishing the games. Listen to how sick this is. It's so sick that the developers and publishers are literally focusing on the first piece of the game because they know that's what people will play. This is a mass psychosis going on.
That's what mass psychosis.
It Takes Two is coming to Steam and Origin, and this is PC Gamer, I'm assuming other platforms, on March the 26th.
And costs only $1,000.
It could potentially cost you negative $970.
Yeah, maybe.
So It Takes Two genuinely does look great, though, and I'm really excited to play it. But that is just... What a crazy man. I'm a big fan of his.
When you started reading that article, I thought that you were going to kind of reveal that it had been taken a bit out of context. Like that he'd said maybe, you know... Oh, I'd bet $1,000 that people won't get bored of this. But then the quote is like him saying, "You can bloody well quote me on that. Make it the headline. I guarantee that I will give $1,000 to anyone who gets bored, as long as you're honest."
It's impossible, and quote me on this, to get tired of this game. You can put this as the headline. I can literally give $1,000 to anyone who says, "Oh, I'm tired of this game now," because it doesn't surprise me. $1,000. I guarantee I'll give it to everyone who gets tired. But they have to be honest about it.
God, you can put this as the headline. I love that.
Do that, but don't. I'm not going to do it.
Not that, but like sort of like that.
Yeah, but like that. Anyway, that's Joseph Fares. He's excellent. Let's see how It Takes Two goes, because I loved A Way Out, in spite of its jonkiness.
Yes.
And we'll see how that It Takes Two. It's a cool premise, cool co-op game. Looking forward to it. I'm excited. Go,
Joseph. From It Takes Two to Question Three.
Oh!
It's by Greg Smith. Thank you, Greg Smith, for saying, "Hello, you lovely people. Is there an obscure game you remember playing that you can't remember the name of but can only describe its absurdity? For example, I remember a PS1 game where you play as a police car, helicopter, and bike. It was intense but fun nonsense. P.S. You guys got me through my night shifts in the fight against COVID." Well, thank you, Greg Smith.
Thank you, Greg.
All the best to you. It's a good question. I really like this question because everyone's got these games. I find that, or I have found in the past year or so, that I've lost most of mine in that I've slowly been making my way through looking at almost every game in the PS1 library so that I know I'm not missing out any gems for playback. And in doing that, I've come across a couple of games where I've gone, "Oh, that's that game," and now I know the name of it. So while I used to have a lot of these, I have fewer because I've since kind of looked them up. One that I once went to Reddit for to get the name of, there's a subreddit which is really good. You might be aware of Tip of My Tongue, TOMT, it's called, the subreddit. And you go there and ask them, "What's that word that means, you know, that thing?" Or, "What was that show that had, you know, Mel Gibson in it," or whatever, and they tell you, like, you give them as much information as you can, they tell you. And there's a sort of spin-off subreddit to that that's specifically for video games called Tip of My Joystick. So you just go there and say the platform, the approximate year, and describe as much as you can, and they'll tell you what it, you know, like, if anyone knows it. And I had this demo when I was younger for PC, and it was kind of cartoony, like hand-drawn animation style. And it was this sort of short, quite grotesque, I think he was supposed to be a child, but he looked like a short, fat man, like an old, like a middle-aged man, with a big belly sticking out of his t-shirt, and he had a cap on that had one of those little propellers on the top.
Right.
And it started with him asleep, and he had all these monsters, different monsters who lived with him in his house, and they were trying to wake him up, and they were like setting off the... Like they were shouting at him with like a megaphone and stuff and swinging his bed around, and he was just sleeping. And so their solution to that is to put loads of dynamite under his bed and blow up the entire house. And they then all get scattered across America in the explosion. And he finally wakes up in this shell of a house. And then the levels are just these platform levels where he goes around America, different states, trying to find all of his friends and recover them. I discovered from Reddit that it was called Arcade America, I believe, which is a bit of a strange name. But it was just a very odd game that I only had the demo for. It was like the first two levels or something and the opening cutscene. I remembered really vividly when the house blows up, it cuts to this like overhead view of all of America, and you see all of the monsters like fly up from the house, and like they kind of whiz past the camera and then all land in different states. And as one of them whizzes past, he goes, "Maybe we should have tried the alarm clock."
Oh, God.
That's just like the one line I remember from it as he falls into New Orleans or whatever.
Looking at him now. He is upsetting, isn't he?
He is horrible. The Arcade America boy/man.
Yeah, that's not a boy, is it? It can't be.
No. It was quite erratically animated and a bit difficult to actually platform with, and he sort of had this little grunty voice, and it was a really strange game, really strange cutscene, but I eventually found the name of that one. Do you have any that you're still awaiting a title for?
Yeah, so this is I've put in no effort to find out, but I was thinking about this game the other day, and I was trying to work out a way to actually talk about it on the podcast, and then we got this question. I was like, oh, that's perfect.
I should say I didn't go and find out the name of it for this podcast. I discovered it a year or so ago, but yeah.
Right, yeah. Mine was also a PC game. It was an educational game. There was some sort of, I think it was in one of a series, and I don't think it was the first one, but it might also have not been in a series.
Mm-hmm.
It's set on planet Earth.
Right.
And the host, I suppose that's not the host, the sort of mascot character, presenter character, was like an alien.
Okay.
An alien thing. And it had like a sort of Hey Arnold shaped head,
right,
sort of quite rugby ball / American football shaped, egg shaped but sideways, and you would go around different time periods around the world, and there would just sort of be these, say for example there was like Chicago in the, I don't know, in like the 20s or something, and it had the music just sort of playing on a loop, and you could click around and like interact with stuff, and it would tell you little facts, and you had a sticker book, I think, that you would fill with different things as you went around. You could create a profile, and you would like send postcards from the different time periods and locations. You would go to Egypt and there would be the pyramids.
Oh,
so ring any bells?
I had a game in this, I'm assuming I had a game that was in the same series that was called My First Amazing World Explorer, which is the best title ever.
I know that one. I know that name.
I know in that game you had to send, or you were able to, you had a sticker book and you would go around different parts of the world and you could send postcards. So I'm assuming it was like the same thing, but I don't remember being a mascot in that.
Maybe I'm combining them in my head.
Maybe.
Because I definitely know that name rings a bell, and I definitely had that. But I'm wondering what the hell this alien game is, or if there was one, and I just invented him. But yeah, that one is one that I just, yeah. When I worked for Splash Damage, we had a fair amount of downtime between like tests and stuff. And there was one of the members of the team, she would just post in our sort of work group chat about an obscure game that she used to play growing up, and we would all just like try and hunt around on the internet to try and find it. And
you told me about this.
It was almost always like a weird horse game that was only released in Scandinavia or something.
Yeah.
But it is fun, like going off almost zero clues and just having to work, just search with the weirdest keywords imaginable to try and find them. But history alien sticker book game, if anyone knows.
I found it.
Have you?
I found your weird Hey Arnold shaped head, man. It's his mouth that's Hey Arnold shaped.
Oh,
he's got
is it?
Eyes on top of his football.
Reunite me.
My First Amazing History Explorer.
There we go.
Let's have a look. I've got it up on my phone, so I can't send you
a thing. History Explorer.
If you go on images, you don't have to scroll down very far to see a rugby ball.
There he is.
Man.
Yes, there he is.
That's him.
And then the cover of the... God, the cover of the game is bad, isn't it?
It's Darling Kindersley, yeah. Like, that's what the other one looked like, the game that I had.
It's not even got the alien on it. Where's the fun in that?
So it's got all the stock imagery they used to put in their big fact books.
Yeah, that's him. You found the alien. You solved it, Peter.
There he is.
You solved the mystery.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
I had a great educational game when I was younger. I actually can't remember the name of it, but I remember very vividly the whole game, so I'm not so bothered about not knowing the title. But you played as the Super Solver, who was this cool dude with a jacket on and a cap. He didn't actually have you couldn't see his face because like the collar of his jacket was up and he had a cap over his head. And in the one I had, it was a maths one. Mm. And you went around a TV station and you had to go in different rooms and solve little maths puzzles and stuff. And you had to, like, when you solved a maths puzzle, you would get a symbol and you had to, like, get all of these symbols before the time ran out. Like, you had a clock ticking down as the night wore on. And that would allow you to unlock the final room to get the baddie out of the room that he'd locked himself in and he was going to, like, take over the TV studio. But chasing you around this area was this, like, sentient TV, which was a bit scary. He was just called Telly, and you had to zap him with a special TV remote. But it had a little bit of attitude, this game. For an edutainment game, it was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. The Super Solver, he was a dude.
Super Solver.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm just also now looking at Jump Ahead Year One.
Oh, yeah.
Which I imagine a lot of people played and had. I had younger siblings, so I definitely played it when I was too old to play it, but it was one of the few PC games we had, slash one of the few pieces of software that would run on our ancient PC in general.
Right.
So I remember that one and like solving all the puzzles and stuff and thinking, yeah, I'm clever. I'm good at this school stuff, even though I'm several years too old for this game.
Yeah.
Very basic puzzles. Well, that was fun, but now it's time to move on to something a little bigger.
It certainly is. Hang on, I just put my prop away, actually. Foolishly. I'm ready. I'm ready.
It's a big discussion.
Big discussion.
Big discussion time. Time for the big discussion. This big discussion comes from Jamie Goddard, who says, Jamie. All right, Les.
All right.
Big news week for casting of roles. Hang on. Big news week for casting of roles, The Last of Us and Borderlands. And in general, I'm a fan of the choices, Jamie. What's going on in that sentence, bud? I love the idea of some of favorite games making it to the big and small screen and having some confidence that it won't turn out major wonkums. Or wonkums.
It actually says wonkums.
My question is this. Though I'm excited for these adaptations, are we now at a stage where we really don't need them? I know financially and getting more eyes on the product makes sense, but in terms of the essence of the storytelling, are we now at a place that games like The Last of Us already do things that a TV adaptation can't do? A lot of the moral questions it asks are down to the fact that you are playing it, you're vicariously living through the experience and committing the actions that you come to question. The greedy part of me can't wait for these adaptations, but my head says the perfect story has already been told. Okay, that's all. Bye.
It's a very, very good point, I think. This kind of made me think a little bit when I read this question. Despite the Womcoms writing, it's fine, Jamie, as you were.
You did a great job, Jamie.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree, in a sense. I think there's no harm in translating something into just purely visual media, like a TV show or a movie, from a video game, and it'll probably like make these things slightly more accessible to people who might enjoy that kind of narrative or that world, but might not be so into physically playing video games, such as, you know, my dad, for example, might get something out of, I mean, he probably wouldn't like The Last of Us, but just as an example, you know, like there might be people in your family or your friends or your partners or whatever who aren't so into getting to grips with the controller and trying to use two thumbsticks at the same time and all that kind of thing, but they might enjoy that kind of narrative. So that is, I think there's still a reason to do this, but I think it's a very good point that because it does feel like at the moment there's a lot of exciting activity happening with video games being turned into both TV shows and movies. So we've got the ones that are mentioned in Jamie's question, but there's also, you know, there's the Mortal Kombat game coming out, film coming out, which some people think looks quite promising. There's another Sonic movie sequel has officially been announced now. And there are more that I can't think of off the top of my head, but it all seems to be going on. And if our list on video game movies ranked from worst to best is anything to go by, the most recent ones seem to be the best ones. You know, there does seem to be a gradual improvement in the quality. You know, quite infamously, video game movie adaptations have been bad for a very long time, but since around about when Rampage came out, things have been getting better in terms of both movies and TV shows. You know, you've got The Witcher as well on Netflix. So it's almost a shame that it's taken this long for this kind of thing to happen, where seemingly these adaptations are a lot better than they used to be, but it's come at a time where the games themselves are far more... we now have the resources, we have the technology to do very narrative-heavy, cinematic things with famous actors even in them. So it's almost come at the wrong time. It's come too late because, yeah, the games can now kind of do a lot of the things that once upon a time only movies and TV shows could have done. But here we are. Jamie also makes the good point, of course, about you being in control of that character actually adds an extra dimension that you don't get out of a movie and TV show. But I do think, as I say, there's still something to be gained from translating these things, adapting these things into shows and movies, because there'll be people out there who just don't want to play the games. They physically don't want to have to go through using a controller to enjoy that narrative and that that universe.
Yeah, yeah. I think it does make sense. Everything you've said there, and also what Jamie says. I am largely in agreement. I think, you know, games have come so far, and the stuff that you have to do in some games for the purpose of, you know, storytelling can be quite challenging, but it's important because that's how video games work. It's not just Tetris. And yeah, I think perhaps a lot of people don't realize that, people who don't play games, that is, don't realize what games can do. Like,
definitely.
Let's say, just as an example, 6 Days in Fallujah. That's the name of the game, isn't it? Is it 6 Days in Fallujah?
Is it six?
I think it's just the number of days that I'm confused
about.
Yeah,
me too. I'm not sure if it's six.
Is it six or is it?
It is six.
It's
yeah.
six. Okay. There's understandably been huge outcry about that because of, you know, it's very recent and it's... It just presents all sorts of moral quandaries regarding things that I'm not going to get into here. However, I think a lot of the initial complaints, especially when it was cancelled the first time around, came from people who I don't think necessarily knew what video games could do. And they just assumed it would be like glorified in some fun shooter where... You get points, you get points and like rewards for participating in something that was very real and is still very recent. Whereas, you know, you look at something like The Last of Us and it shows that games can be so much more than that, and they can deliver on the promise of real drama and making you connect to these characters and these people and actually care without being headshot. Kill Parker, you know, the kind of stuff that games get stereotyped for. And so when you switch that the other way and you're looking at adapting games into TV shows, there is certainly that question of, well, you know, as games, especially with The Last of Us, that, you know, it being as excellent as it is, it's like, is there anything to really be gained by turning it into a TV show apart from weakening the impact of what you could previously participate in, you know, by playing the game. But yeah, for all the reasons you said, I think it's a great idea. And also, as Jamie said, like, selfishly, I would love to see an HBO produced The Last of Us show. Of course I would, because it feels like that's just the logical production company to make that and do it justice. And it sounds like they've got the right people on board. And I'm all for sharing games with as many people as possible, even if, as you say, they can't, they're just not going to experience these stories. You know, they're not going to play them. So why not try and bring it to them. The game will always be there for us to play if it's crap or if we're not a huge fan. And again, from a financial perspective, The Witcher 3 sold so many millions more copies after there was a Netflix show about the book that it's based on. So it's definitely worth doing. I just hope it's done well. And again, as you said, like, it's the trajectory of how adapted video game media has progressed has really skyrocketed in the past sort of 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you say that you really want to see this, you know, a Last of Us like HBO show or whatever. I don't know, like, how excited I am for it, to be honest. I feel the same way about, say, like the Uncharted movie, things like that. And that's nothing to do with the fact that it's, you know, been in development hell for that long. You know, even putting that aside, if they just announced it now for the first time ever, I kind of feel like I've already enjoyed stories with these characters, and I feel like I know a lot about them, about what they've been through. And I get that, obviously, at least with Uncharted, it's like a prequel, so it's presumably going to be, you know, a story that hasn't been told yet. But The Last of Us sounds like it will be more of an adaptation. If it's going to be Joel and Ellie together, who, you know, they've both been cast, it's probably going to be the story of the first game. I guess it could maybe be set between the two games, but I don't know if they've actually confirmed it is an adaptation of the first game. To me, I kind of feel like the story has been told. I'm not going to watch it, like, and I really hope that it changes my mind, and that I, you know, see the first trailer when it eventually comes out, or watch the first episode and think, oh wow, this is actually incredible. It's like, you know, The Walking Dead, but in the Last of Us world. You know, I welcome it to be good, but if they said it was cancelled, I wouldn't be sad at all. I wouldn't miss it. Mm-hmm. Just because I feel like I already know the story. I've been there. I've done that, and I've kind of got a voice and a face in my head for those characters. I think, like, Pedro Pascal is quite a good casting for Joel. Not sure, like, if I feel strongly one way or the other about I can't remember the name of the lady who's been cast as Ellie, but mm-hmm. she's the one from Game of Thrones,
yeah,
which doesn't really narrow it down, but she's that one,
yeah.
But yeah, you know, you've got these characters in your head the way that you met them in the game, and I almost don't really want to see them portrayed differently. But then, you know, I'm a Star Wars fan, and they're doing that on Disney Plus, so bit hypocritical, really.
Yeah, well, it's understandable what you're saying. I suppose I care more, like, I agree in regards to the Uncharted movie. Like, I will watch that, but I don't think it's going to be brilliant.
No.
But also, Uncharted was light-hearted in a lot of ways, whereas The Last of Us, I feel, is so grounded and serious and adult that it needs to be done properly, in a sense. And given HBO's track record for producing dramas of that fashion, just high caliber dramas in general, but, like, certainly of that very adult, often quite gruesome, short series, then I'm really enthusiastic about how they're gonna do it. And they aren't gonna be the same characters, and that is obviously, there's gonna be a disconnect there. But part of me is also glad that they didn't just go with someone who looked identical to the characters, because then when they started speaking, it would have been even weirder, I think.
Yeah.
So at the very least, it's going to be an interpretation. And I'm very excited to see how that one comes along. The Borderlands movie, however, I am a little worried about.
Of course, I forgot that was written in the question. But
very briefly on that, because it's clear that they're casting the biggest names possible. Mm. And oh boy, have they been doing that. It's kind of ridiculous, the cast that they've assembled. But it feels like it's going to be, unless they go for a wacky visual style to match it, which would be an undertaking. It does seem to me like it's just going to be Borderlands in name. And that's kind of it. It's just because I know Borderlands obviously is heavily inspired by Mad Max anyway, but I reckon they'll just make a comedy Mad Max film. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not really Borderlands. They've cast Kevin Hart as Roland, who is just, you know, he's the straight man of Borderlands. Like he, yeah. And Kevin Hart, I don't think has ever played a sincere role in his life. I love Kevin Hart. I think he's brilliant, but I think he's a terrible fit for Roland, who's tall as well. And Claptrap as Jack Black. That's going to be a voice role, right? Why wouldn't you just get the same voice as the character from the game?
I don't know.
Probably because they wanted Jack Black in it to get as many asses in seats as possible. And again, I understand that. But as a Borderlands fan, I'm not expecting much from this film.
I think
at
it's
all.
That one's likely to. I mean, I've just remembered that the current video game adaptation scene isn't. It's not on a 10 out of 10 at the moment because there's that Monster Hunter film coming out, which looks very Rampage, like just barely okay, you know, like Rampage was. And I can kind of see the Borderlands game being like, I mean, I don't think it's out yet, that film, so I can't say exactly
what Monster Hunter.
Yeah,
I think it is, because there was we did a weird news and there was outcry in China about a line in it.
I suppose it must be. Shows how well it's gone down that I've seen so little of it that I don't even know whether it's out or not.
It's on a 48% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, there you go.
At the end of last year.
Oh, it was that long ago. I was going to say, I don't know if it's out yet, but certainly from what I've seen in the trailer, it doesn't look very good. It's just, like you say, Borderlands by name, Monster Hunter by name.
Yeah. There'll be stuff there for fans, but it's...
Yeah.
I mean, it came out in the UK at the end of January, so it's not that long ago here.
Oh, right. Okay, there you go.
It's... I'm expecting similar stuff, except it'll be worth watching because of the cast that they've got.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. Like, it'll be fun.
And there will be nods in there that
yeah,
you like.
Absolutely. There'll be stuff to take away from it, and I imagine it'll be really fun. Because I was, I've been a big fan of the Jumanji reboot, which, contrary to popular belief, did not try and erase the existence of the original Jumanji, and ended up just being like a really fun, silly play on a similar concept, except it's a video game instead of a board game. And I really like those two films. And if it's anything like that, I'll get my money's worth and I'll enjoy it. But I'm not expecting greatness. However, with The Last of Us, I kind of am expecting greatness with the cast and the team that they've assembled to put it together.
The one thing I am actually thinking about it, one thing I'm really looking forward to is seeing proper live action clickers and stuff.
Yeah. The makeup,
I think that will look
cool.
Really cool, yeah.
I think that it's going to do... I think that would be really... Because it's, again, going back to that argument of like experiencing it is more impactful than... like playing it is more impactful than watching it, but I feel like they could do some really, really cool sort of the you know, not showing the clickers for a long time, but you hear them and you see glimpses and you hear word of them, and then they, like, I don't want them to overuse clickers, but I think they could make the clickers really scary.
They'll be like the White Walkers of Game of Thrones. I think they won't show very much of them until, yeah, maybe sort of towards the end of the first series, or and actually the other thing I've just thought of now as well is that you know, for what I was saying about that we know the story and we know where it's going to go, that's certainly like the series arc or the arc of multiple series, but you know, from one episode to the next there will be little subplots where they reach a mall, or you know, they find themselves in a village where there's, you know, some people hunkered down who, you know, they won't be adapting everything from the game. I suspect there'll be little bits thrown in there that are unique to a TV adaptation, because that's quite often how these things are done. So it will be fresh in that respect, even to people who've played the game, I imagine. And maybe they will try and do it like for like, but there's a lot of gunplay in that game, so probably not going to do it scene for scene, I don't think.
No, likely not. So I suppose to circle back to the question, we're all of us are in a very privileged position in that we can, as players of video games, platform depending, of course, largely, we can go and experience these games that are being adapted for ourselves. Or maybe we already have. And then we can make a decision about whether or not we want to be excited about the film or TV show, whether or not we watch it, or whether we just avoid it altogether because we don't want our experience to be tarnished. Whereas people who don't play video games, this will be their only chance to experience that, and they might end up with Monster Hunter. So we get it all. While I understand the argument of does it need to be made, we at least get the choice to of how we experience it.
Yeah, exactly.
Peter, that's the end of the show. It's cancelled.
It certainly is. Yeah, it's we're not bringing it back. I hope you all enjoyed it.
RIP podcast.
RIP podcast, that's it, yeah.
Where can people find us if they want to check us out?
If they want to check us out and support us enough that we can carry on making this podcast, say, next week, for example, they can find us everywhere at Team Triple Jump. Our content goes out at youtube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. That's videos on YouTube and streams on YouTube and Twitch. When we're streaming, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Madstadactyl, and Trowling Badger. Remember, you can get essentially a free Twitch sub if you're already paying for Amazon Prime and you don't realize that it comes with a free Twitch sub as part of the bundle. Head on over to that and you can sub to us for free. In addition to your usual Amazon Prime payment. We've got social media at twitter.com and facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. Thank you to Luke Eldon for looking after Facebook for us. He's doing an excellent job. The Patreon is patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. Lots of rewards on there. Go and have a look. Discord is bit.ly/Team Triple Jump. Jack and Joe looking after the Discord and doing a wonderful job. The podcast, if you are watching on YouTube, is available in audio form at play.acast.com/s/triple jump. The website is triplej.merp. You can head over there. We've got like a careers tab and stuff, which at the moment doesn't have anything, but keep an eye out. We've got a new shop, so don't go to the old shop anymore. Go to triplejumpshop.com. And you can also follow at triplejumpshop on Twitter to get all the very latest on like when new merch is coming out, because sometimes it's a bit time sensitive. You have to get in there quick. We have limited runs and stuff, so follow them if you like. And finally, triplej.mup/VODs is a redirect link to our VODs channel on YouTube, which is looked after by Pat, where he puts out weekly highlight videos, and they're very good.
Absolutely. You can follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter at @ThatPeterAustin and myself just on Twitter at @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday and Friday. Thursday being the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube. Monday and Friday being solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons, Sunday for everyone else. The podcast is every Saturday and we do shows once every other week or thereabouts. Leave a review on iTunes if you can. It helps something to do with algorithms. And this week it is a Worst Games Ever week. There's a brand new Worst Games Ever episode out right now for patrons of a certain tier. And everybody else, it'll be out tomorrow on Sunday. So go give that a whirch. And as Peter said, we've got the new shop. We're going to keep promoting it. triplejumpshop.com. There are limited supplies of certain things. I believe we are down to single digits. It may actually be gone now.
Yeah, by now.
But the floppy disk that we have been selling, the Worst Games Ever floppy disk, we're nearly out.
We had like four left about 2 days ago at time of recording, so they've probably gone, but run, go now, just in case there's one left.
That's
if you
it.
Are wanting a floppy disk.
We genuinely can't make more of them because we don't have a floppy disk guy. We had to buy in bulk floppy disks and manually label them all up.
And there aren't many of them out there.
Yeah, so
not
that's
nice,
it.
Not nice, clean ones without branding all over them anyway.
That's all we got. We've also got a hoodie and a couple of shirts and a badge and some other cool stuff as well. So go check them out before it's all gone. And then whose fault will it be? Yours. It'll be your fault. Peter, who keeps the lights on this week? Remind us.
It's Nintendo's witch. Do not use that word. We're allowed to use it in this podcast, actually. It says in the ad read that as part of the public service announcement we're doing to tell everyone not to use the word witch,
right.
We can say it. But hey, stop it, everyone. It's now owned by Tendo.
Tendo. The big Tendo.
Well, because they're our friends, because they sponsor us. We're on nickname terms with Tendo.
Tendies.
Yeah.
Our guy. Okay, well, thank you for listening, everybody, / watching. Hope you have a lovely weekend, and we will speak to you again next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.